So this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network every Thursday from 1 to 1:30 p.m. I'm your host, Danilo Cuellar, and today we have Mark Stevens, a voluntarist from Arizona who's doing a lot of work demolishing judges and lawyers in their own field. So Mark, could you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Well, I've been helping people defend themselves against bureaucratic attacks since about 96. And from what I learned by going into court myself, and, you know, it's a continual process that, seeing what works, what doesn't, what's effective, what's not effective, what may be true but not effective. And so you kind of, take what's effective and discard, what isn't. And at Road Adventures in Legaland, it was based on my personal experience. Pretty much everything in the – well, all the experiences that I describe in the book really did happen, and it's all real, and some of the people have actually been on the radio, on the show. And from there of doing that, I started doing the radio, and other people heard me, and I had the website, and so I started helping more and more people. So it went to where I was not just helping people in the U.S., but also Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and parts of Europe, like, English-speaking anyway. Right. And it's basically just helping people do it themselves instead of spending thousands and thousands of dollars on a lawyer just to screw them in the end anyway, which is something that just happened to someone yesterday. They were supposed to have made a deal where, and I didn't know about this because with the lawyer, because I don't recommend people use lawyers for anything, but unless you're really up against the wall and you can't speak well. But the deal was supposed to be a year. The judge, did his own thing and gave him 5. So, well. So that's what doing what an attorney did. So it's just using basic logic also and really looking at what the situation is stripped out from an anarchist point of view, of course, and like from the Spooner mindset and using that perception of our anarchist perception of the world and using that to defend against a bureaucratic attack. It's just a way of stripping through all the spin and being able to reframe it in a more objective way so that other people, let's say a jury, can say, the prosecutor, he's just a lawyer spinning the truth to make this guy look bad.
I think most voluntarists understand, that we debate with our peers, we debate with our family, friends, people you meet on the street. But most people, for some reason, maybe they don't consider debating with, like you do, lawyers and judges, right? Which is basically where you take the same arguments and you bring it into that. Would you say is that accurate?
I would. It's accurate. Only that the only thing I would just take a little bit of issue with is that is debate.
Okay.
It's something that when I'm just asking questions. So I'm in a spirit of resolution. So I just want you to help me understand your position, and we can pay the fine and we can go home. Of course, when you walk through the process of trying to get me to understand, you're not going to be able to support your argument, and that's why a lot of these things get tossed out. So what happens? The debate word comes up all the time. Mm-hmm. Debate and argue, which is basically like a kind of a straw man thing that these agents do. So you'll ask them, well, what evidence do you have, in fact, that your law actually apply to me? Well, I'm not going to argue the law with you. I'm not going to debate the law. I didn't do that. So that comes up all the time. But I believe in with the anarchist perception or with the scientific, anarchist, scientific, rational. When you look at the situation for how it really is, and you strip out the spin, then you can just go in and you can ask questions in a Socratic way. And be able to strip that false perception of legitimacy that they enjoy, that so-called, they seem to enjoy a moral high ground.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right? And so what I do is always engage in questions in court and out of court to resolve whatever problem is being presented to me. And we just want to ask questions so that we can come to a resolution. It's just that by asking the questions and staying on point and identifying logical fallacies and getting to just really what their position exactly is, they know it's untenable, and that's why it usually will go away, or they'll respond in a rage.
So it seems like when I watched a few of your videos, and you start off with the central question, which is what you just said, you know, prove to me that the laws apply to me, and not just, you know, not just because I'm here, but give me evidence, right? And so if they say the Constitution is evidence, do they sometimes tell you that?
Well, I know that the operating presumption is, and this is, if you go to the website, you can hear dozens and dozens of call of shames. Nobody is going to turn around and debate disagree with you or me or anyone else when we say that the way all governments, not just U.S., not just the lunatics in Long Island, all of them operate under the single operating presumption. If you're physically in China, Chinese law applies to you. If you're physically in Long Island, New York law applies to you, or Arizona, where it happens to be. They all will agree with that. Mm-hmm. So I start, and that's where we have agreement. Okay, so I understand your initial position here is that you have jurisdiction because if I'm physically in Arizona, then your constitution and laws apply to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So that's kind of the Socratic method. So you understand and you're both in agreement with each other. With this is my, I don't like to say opponent, but this is the agent's position. So I have agreement. Now it's time to deconstruct that. I'll start asking questions, how and why questions. I want to get more data. And then when I get a different position, I want to confirm, okay, so this is your position, and then ask further questions. Mm-hmm. So when you're a bureaucrat, though, and you're doing it on a foundation of lies, it doesn't take that long. It doesn't take that many questions to uncover the fact that their argument is not based on any facts. It's not based on any logic or any kind of rational thought.
Yeah. So, but have you had people tell you, or lawyers or judges, refer to the Constitution as being proof?
Yes. But let me give an example from not too long ago where people would look at them as some kind of authority, because I think the more they're considered an authority, the harder they fall.
Okay.
And so this guy Nicholas Court is a deputy senior attorney general in New Hampshire. His job is to argue in front of the Supreme Court. I will not take away that the man is probably damn good at what he does, mm-hmm. and others are going to say, "Wow, they're going to put him up on a pedestal."
Yeah.
So. They won't just say, "Well, the Constitution." They'll say, because the Constitution says so.
Yeah.
And now, so if you listen to the recording, so let me see if I understand your position. The Constitution applies because the Constitution says so.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Isn't that circular logic? That's not really answering my question.
Yeah.
Can I put the burden, I keep the burden on them instead of me making an affirmative statement. Isn't that circular logic? Now, they'll disagree because it's their argument, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many people are going to put out forth a fallacious argument that their entire livelihood is based on and then agree that that's fallacious?
Yeah.
So I put it to them in the form of a question, and if I have to, then I'll change the context and say, "Well, if I said my rules apply because they say they do, would you accept that?" And of course, they won't.
Mm-hmm.
So what Nick Court did was when Nick Court, the attorney general, says it, it's authoritative, right? It sounds really good, but when some schmuck like me from Long Island says the exact same thing, so. The law applies because the laws say so. Now it's starting to dawn on them. So he plays the history card. Well, Mark, it's not just because it said so. It's because of the history that went into how it was created. So, you know, I'm an anarchist. I understand how these things work. So my follow-up let me see if I understand you now, Nick. Is the history you're talking about the fact that everybody in New Hampshire is forced to pay you? And that's where he decided, I gotta go. I gotta hang up on this guy. As a senior deputy attorney general, and again, he's good at what he does.
Yeah.
He applies the law to people every day in front of the Supreme Court. He's a damn good attorney. You can't take that away from him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think much of attorneys, but how can someone like me, with no formal legal training whatsoever, zero, some schmuck from Long Island, I grew up in Selden, not too far from when you guys are.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I still talk like that sometimes. How, the reason, it's not because I'm an expert and that I know law better or it's not. It's because I can look at things as they are, more as they are anyway, mm-hmm. and I can just ask some questions and I don't accept any sacred cows. Yeah. And that's the thing. As anarchists, we don't typically accept sacred cows.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess as a lawyer, you're just taught to accept that the law applies because the law applies. and then you go from there, right? They never question that initial position.
Right. Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I have brought into legal documents the fallacy of it's turtles all the way down.
Yes.
Right? And so I did this graphically, and I did it in the book where they'll say that the Constitution laws apply. Well, okay, well, where's your facts? Because that's an argument.
Yeah.
That's all it is. When someone says, and the cops do it every day, but they're willing to kill you, unlike, I mean, most, you know, senators aren't going to actually kill you, mm-hmm. But the cops will, and it's based on, because they so believe that, hey, if you're here, the laws apply, and I can do what I want.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just an argument.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just lost my...
Oh. No, I was just saying, you know, the circular reasoning that, you know, it's written, the law applies because it's written there, right? So when you're in court, you bring up these logical fallacies to them, you say, no, that's argumentum ad baculum, you tell them that in court, and do they recognize that as a...
They do. They don't like to actually accept it. So, well, sir, it's just like an attorney said to me the other day when I pointed out that wasn't evidence. Where's your actual facts? And then he hits you with the ad hominem. No amount of facts that I give you or no amount of evidence is going to convince you. So I said, oh, that's right. When all else fails, call your opponent a retard. Oh, that's what you pay $100,000 for an education for?
Yeah.
At the ad hominem?
Yeah.
I may not necessarily frame the objection as a logical fallacy. It may be a formal objection that I'll make. It may just be that's non-responsive.
Okay.
I asked for facts. It's like if I ask for, this is a very common one, especially with the IRS guys. You say, what facts do you have to actually, you know, to prove you, you know, that the Constitution and Code actually apply to me? I said, well, that's a frivolous argument. The courts have long rejected that, Mark. What the hell are you talking to? So I will say, objection, it's non-responsive. I asked a question, I'm not raising an argument. I won't necessarily say, oh, it's a straw man.
Yeah, okay, I see.
I mean, I do, but I don't. It's not something that's necessary to do. I think when I teach people when we're doing the show, I think it's important that people recognize the fallacy for what it is,
yeah.
So that they can't object. The important thing is that they say objection, and if they say it's a logical fallacy, that should be enough to overcome, you know, to have the objection sustained. He's not answering the question.
Yeah.
I remember. Oh, I'm sorry. I the turtle's all the way down to
my yeah, right. yeah, 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 yeah. No problem.
It's been a long week, my friend.
No problem.
So you ask them what facts they rely on to prove the Constitution applies, and they'll cite their code. I said, well, but I'm asking you what evidence there is that applies. What they'll do is they'll quote a court opinion. Mm-hmm. That court opinion will then quote another court opinion, which is just one lawyer quoting another lawyer. So you've got your opinion. Well, what supports your opinion, sir? Oh, the court said this, and it's turtles all the way down.
Yeah. So it's basically what would that be? Like what fallacy would that be? Just appeal to tradition, maybe?
That I don't know if it's technically an appeal to tradition. I can't remember the actual name for it. I always just refer to it. It's turtles all the way down.
Okay.
And it's worked like. What the hell are you talking about? And then I can explain, you know, how fallacious that is. And, you know, sometimes I'll even give, oh, well, that's like, it comes from the old urban legend that somebody had asked, what is the earth rest on? Well, that, my dear, is a giant elephant. What is the elephant on? Well, that's simple. It's a turtle. Well, it's a turtle. And so then you're able to explain. I'm asking you for the evidence that your argument is based on. You're giving me another argument, or you're giving me an opinion, and that you're giving me nothing of substance to support your argument. Mm-hmm. What it comes down to is it's an appeal to an authority.
That's it. Yeah, right. Appeal authority, because you know the authority has jurisdiction or has.
It's right.
Right.
Said so. Yeah, it's right because a lawyer said so.
Yeah, yeah.
So they'll make fun of us if you view it that if you take a rational, objective view of it.
Mm-hmm.
They will turn around and say, it's funny, the courts call that, they don't call that a logical fallacy, they call it precedent.
Yeah, well, that's right, you were saying that, yeah.
Oh, is it still an opinion? Well, okay, so you're saying that your argument is correct because a dead lawyer said it was. Now, if you gave me the basis that lawyer used to come to that conclusion, well, I got something to work. That's not an appeal to an authority.
Mm-hmm.
That he just happens to be an authority who has a logical basis for the argument. But they don't. And the best that they can do is, if you don't like, appeal it.
Which is similar to, you know, asking somebody, you know, if you're an abolitionist for slavery, and they say, well, how can you be against slavery? We've always had slavery. Centuries we've... right?
Your
how can you be against it? How could you be against slavery? So, appealing to tradition is not a logical argument at all, whatsoever.
It's absolutely no support for the argument that slavery should be good. It's just like with the logical fallacies that they use, and I know you mentioned Ad Baculum, which is one of their favorites. But usually what they have is three main ones for the purpose of trying to support the concept of government and show that it's moral. So instead of actually having facts, they have three logical fallacies. Well, it's an appeal to authority. Well, it's the government. Oh, okay. That doesn't support the argument. They're just people. Two, it's an you have the appeal to popularity. I heard an attorney do this several times in a trial this week up in Alaska, and we knew to address this beforehand because they all do it. And this is it. We've heard it a million times. We all know we're supposed to pay taxes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and it's just like there's so many other ones that you can have. I'd love to have one with Bill O'Reilly. Where they say, so many people believe this. Yeah, Bill, do you believe in Islam? Are you a Muslim? Oh, you're not. Well, how can a billion people be wrong? So the appeal to authority means nothing. Exactly. The last one, this actually came out in an article that I wrote about Jerry Cobb, who's a spokesman for the Maricopa County attorney, the head prosecutor guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this is the argumentum ad baculum. So my question is, what evidence supports your argument the code applies to me because I'm physically in Arizona? Okay, so that's my question about his argument. His support was, every inmate in our prisons is evidence the laws apply. So I even spoke to him, and I said, you're telling me the support for your argument is true because you put other people in prison.
Exactly.
So if you go to the website, I actually did a really good Photoshop job.
I saw that.
You saw that. So your argument that the laws apply to me is true because you put other people in prison. Wow.
Yeah. And coercion does not equal consent, right?
Yeah, and I'm like, what are you? He confirmed that the county attorney actually signed off and wrote part of this garbage. So like, you're trying to tell me that if I'm standing in court. Okay, and it's beyond a reasonable doubt, even jurisdiction, if you're in civil or criminal, whatever burden applies throughout the whole thing. So even things that have to be proven like jurisdiction at pretrial,
yeah.
Or, well, at arraignment. We're standing there in court, and I'm asking you for the facts that you have jurisdiction over me, and you're honestly going to say the other people you've put in prison prove you have jurisdiction over me?
The people we have already beaten and sent into rape cages. It's proof. Stop badgering me.
Yeah. And you know, as anarchists, you know, I mean, the only reason why you're an anarchist is because you've cleared your mind of a lot of contradictions. You're thinking a lot more clear. I mean, still, we still have some, of course. But we can see that. But there are psychological reasons that I go through in the book where the average person cannot process this information. So when your job depends on taking people's money by force, by forcing other people to give you money, you won't see a moral issue with that. And anybody who questions that is questioning you personally, because that's how you live. And so the brain just kind of shuts down. The you know, it's like the amygdala takes over, and it's like, fight or flight, and rational thought is gone. It's quite sad. I saw that a number of times in person with tragedy up in Alaska this week. You have to see it. It's like there was a study that I write about where they changed. They were studying perception, how strong perception was over the facts. And so what they did, they changed the color of playing cards. So instead of a spade being black, they made it red. Mm-hmm. And so when they put it up to somebody and it didn't match their perception, they didn't know what it was. The brain can't process the information, the facts right in front of them.
If they were taught to be, for it to be one thing, you're saying, right? If you're indoctrinated one way, you're physically incapable. Yeah. Yeah, like, my kids, I have two kids, 4 and 2, and you know, I go out with them a lot to, you know, parks and libraries, right? All stolen currency funded. And people tell me, you're such a hypocrite. How can you be an anarchist and you take advantage of libraries? Like, where else am I going to go? And also, you use the roads. What a hypocrite. How am I going to get to places if I don't use the road? What do you expect me to do? You know, so you get that?
Yeah. I guess I have gotten that, but mainly from really pissed off radio show hosts. Uh-huh. Not too many people. Most of the people I know don't bother talking to me. If they disagree, we just avoid the subject. But they know I don't pay taxes. They know I actively encourage people not to pay taxes. And they know that there are certain things where you have no choice, like you just mentioned. The big one where you're a hypocrite would be if you file for bankruptcy. That, because you have a choice. Mm-hmm. It sucks that you may be in that position because some lunatics in Washington, D.C. and New York City and London, you know, cause, I get that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't have to necessarily do it. Another one is you don't have to accept Social Security.
Yeah.
You know, so I know Jeremy Carl Wattner at voluntarius.com writes, he's got a number of articles about that. You don't have to. So that's where you could be seen as contradicting your beliefs. But going to a park? I mean, you don't, come on. Give me a better argument than that for hypocrisy.
Yeah, I mean, my kids, it's funny, like, now that the school year just started, you know, all you see are books on, you know, first day of kindergarten, first day of first grade, first day of middle school, first day. And it's funny, like, they're not going to be anywhere near those places. And it's going to be interesting for them growing up because, you know, all the time I see school buses coming back and forth. You know, I can't separate the similarities between school and prison. I don't know. Have you made these correlations? Like, there's a lot of interesting similarities between the two. Not least of all is that they both use the same vehicles to transport their inmates.
That's right? That's a good point.
Right.
Well, what we did in court, I believe in exposing a gun in a room. If we can take the moral justification that they still enjoy, then the more people will not see them as the good guy. That's very, very bad for them. Mm-hmm. Very good for us. Our job as anarchists and activists is to strip away and show that they don't have a moral high ground here. And so when you see things like in Ferguson, where the police were losing the moral high ground, things got ugly. Mm-hmm. And they were getting out of control. And I applaud that. Not the looting and stuff like that, but the non-compliance and the civil disobedience.
Yeah.
I would like to see more civil disobedience as far as the tax codes come out of that.
Yeah.
Exposing a gun in a room is always a very effective thing to do. It really underscores everything that I recommend that we do when we're in court. And so we did that this week where we brought out the gun in the room. And we were able to get witnesses within the first minute of a cross-examination to prove that they were perjuring themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand they're caught in the middle. So one of the questions was, you look at the witness, and as far as I know, I don't know anyone. I'm not saying I'm the original one here, and I'm certainly not claiming any kind of IP. Well, one of the questions that I think that everybody should ask a witness, and we did this, it was very, very effective, where you say to the witness, who forced you to testify today? I'm not being forced to testify. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm mistaken. you're not on the subpoena. I'm on the subpoena. All right, I'm a little confused. You just said you were not, nobody was forcing you to testify. You're doing it freely, but you're under subpoena. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, and the jury's bewildered. Like, what the hell is he doing? He just proved perjury. The witness is not credible.
Mm-hmm.
But you're exposing the gun in the room.
Yeah.
Well, we even said, well, I had the guy I was working with, I had written it down for him because we knew we would get resistance to this because they're terrified of the judge and the IRS coming after them for saying something like that because it makes the prosecution look bad. Well, it should. And so he said to the judge, could you please instruct the witness on what would happen if they refused to comply with your subpoena? And he's like, oh, I'm not going to get involved. You are. You're the only reason why they're here. You forced them to be here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it was that, it's when you go and you rip out the moral ground that they stand on, it collapses from there. You just showed with just a few questions, the witness just committed a felony for the prosecution. They are so, what that does to me, say that evidence, we always look at the data, right? That evidence that they perjured themselves in the first minute of a cross-examination tells me they are so afraid or so biased in favor of the prosecution, they will actually perjure themselves rather than tell the truth and make the prosecution look bad.
Yeah.
How the hell could you possibly get a fair trial under those circumstances?
Have you ever made a judge like so angry that he, like, I don't know, like send you away or what do you call that, hold you in contempt of court or anything like that?
I wrote about in Adventures in Legoland, Sid Weiss, who was in the Mesa Justice Court. No, Mesa City Court.
Mm-hmm.
He got so upset with me that, and it was so visibly upset and screaming that the cops didn't do anything to me.
Really? They didn't?
Yeah, they did nothing. They didn't haul me away. They were like, what? They're like, what the hell is going on, Mark? And in fact, the prosecutor, Bill Burke, a week later or so, when I went to the pretrial, he said to me, it's in Adventures, he said, what the hell did you say to Sid to make him go crazy like that? I mean, the guy was bonkers. And I thought I was going to get a judge to actually have a stroke or a spontaneous nosebleed.
Oh,
kind of had a thing going with someone online who would be the first one to do that. And I thought Sid was going to be it.
Oh, shoot.
So Bill, I said, you heard about that? He says, we all heard about what you did to Sid.
So what, you just caught him in a fallacy or something?
Well, what happened was I was asking for evidence, and I wasn't going to take a fallacy. I wanted the evidence the prosecution had given to prove his argument there was jurisdiction over me. That's not the judge's burden. It's the prosecutor's.
Yeah.
And he gets scolded. Mark, you are the most difficult man I've ever dealt with. And I said, I'm very easy to get along with, but when you try to con me, I'm not going to stand for it. You play straight with me, Sid, and we'll get along just fine. You try to lie to me, you try to put it over, and he just exploded. Get me the cop! Get me the cop!
Wow.
And I'm just standing there calm. But that's it. You know, he's trying to put something over on me. I'm half Sicilian. I'm from Long Island. You know, my family was from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
we didn't take too well to that. That was one of the few things I learned to value growing up. Mm-hmm. Don't take anybody's word for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, what about your family, and how do they feel about what your, you know, all your adventures?
Well, my wife is pretty much an anarchist, and I believe my children are also. I've always taught them that we live our lives by just a couple of rules. And that is, you're not the boss of me, which my kids understand, and that you don't order people around and use force to control them. Because you don't want that, which led to the second one we teach them is, you treat others the way you want to be treated. Or that, and that you don't do to other people what you don't want done to you. Mm-hmm. It's a very simple way to live your life. And I said, if you live your life that way, you'll be happy, especially if you realize you're not entitled to a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The world, or anybody in it, doesn't owe you anything. And if you remember that, you'll be doing pretty good. So, you know, my kids have seen the bureaucrats firsthand screaming.
Really? Wow.
Screaming at me.
So they come to the court with you to watch you?
Well, they came with me one time, just, it was a non-government attack, and I was trying to pay, and the clerk just didn't understand, and she wouldn't accept the money, and I said, look, I'm late, I'm going to be late to an appointment, let me just pay for this, and she said, sir, you have to file an answer. I said, I filed a motion to dismiss, you didn't accept it because I didn't pay, so let me pay so that you can accept my motion. She's
IP, how do you feel about intellectual property? As an anarchist.
Well, I think it's obvious. Yeah, I don't. I think it's a ridiculous concept from beginning to end. And that doesn't even include the fact that, at least now, it relies on force. It relies on the guns of government to actually enforce it. The idea is completely ridiculous. I mean, the idea, and I write about that in the book, and it's just, because it has to be your idea, right? Well, how many original thoughts have any of us had?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember I was reading someplace that, how can you have ownership of patterns? Like, there's patterns in nature, models, Nobody has ownership of those, right? You can freely use those. And now we have with the internet and with, you can copy anything, You can get, through, Pirate Bay. You can get copies of whatever you want. But... I talk about this with my brother. He's big into rap, and he's saying, but what if somebody spent years doing something? Don't you think they need protection? But the question is, how far are you willing to go? Like, are you really willing to throw someone in a rape cage for copying your song? Is that
sure?
Right?
And that's what the entire concept of property can be boiled down to. That it boils down to, if the initiation of physical force is always wrong, then a lot of the concept of property starts to fall apart.
Mm.
And I think what really started getting me thinking about that, and I think the concept of property is good and bad. It has been the basis of some great innovations, continues to be, but it has also been the foundation for most of the world's genocides and carnages. Mm-hmm. It is every war is fought over property.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, right or wrong or whatever we feel about it, they're always fought over property.
Mm-hmm.
So the example that I've given before is, like tomorrow I'm driving back out to California, so you've got these huge stretches of the Arizona desert that you're going through in California, and you see these signs where somebody in San Diego or Hawaii is claiming to own the desert. And so, you got a lot of time to think out there, and you start thinking, well, if somebody claimed to own the world, we would laugh, right?
Yeah.
So that's not a problem there. So, okay, well, what if they claimed, okay, that's ridiculous, all right, we get it, huh? Well, what if someone claimed to own a continent? They owned Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's still laughable.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do we keep reducing this down to where it becomes plausible and it becomes a good idea? And there's still, to me, it seems to be land that you can work, but still, there's still so much fuzziness there. It's just not... I guess, someone had called, and a friend of mine had said, because I said I was willing to use deadly force if someone broke into my home.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you thinking, well, it's one thing to protect my family, but is it another thing if I'm willing to kill someone just because they're under my property won't leave? I mean, it would have to be more. They'd have to be doing some kind of threat. There would have to be another nonviolent way to be able to resolve that. And I don't have all the... I don't know. I don't know the answers yet.
So, because the way I resolve that is if you can take a piece of property that's crude and, that's unadulterated, and then you make something valuable that other people are willing to pay for, the fruits of your labor, to me, that's what property is that when you can transform something into usable and valuable things that other people cherish, right? And if you can do that, then I would say that's proof of, ownership. To me, whereas let's say eminent domain, right? Government owns certain parts of the desert, like in the Cliven Bundy thing, right? You remember when that happened? Like, how can the government own something when it's not even, they're not only just leaving it alone and not doing anything useful, they're like detonating nuclear weapons out there.
Yeah.
So it's like so far in the other direction. yet they claim ownership.
But, you know, right, and there is no government. There's just men and women forcing us to give the money.
Yeah.
The thing, the example that you gave is a good one, but it still has the same dilemma in that it depends on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's exactly what, for example, the British government through their, you know, their capitalist partners, of course,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not necessarily anti-capitalist, I don't like the force part of it, because when you look at what the British Empire did was going and taking those natural resources from an area and controlling the people and enslaving them. And it's the scale that you're talking about, and it's that scale that I think is so fuzzy and really makes it difficult to have hard lines, you know, this is property, this is not, and it's just too, it's not an answer that I have yet. It just seems to be the more decentralized everything is, the smaller in scale things are, the more plausible, more manageable it is,
yeah.
And it seems to be the less violence that has to be. But once you start into a large scale thing like a forest, you get a group of people claim they own the forest.
Yeah.
I wish I had the answer, but
And also this argument, you know, or this, I guess, debate that we're having about property, you know, the intricacies of property is similar to an anarchist debating with a minarchist, which is kind of it doesn't make so much progress, because, you know, both of us want less government. You know, we want absolute nothing, but they want maybe like 95% less, which even that is still so unrealistic that to argue that last 5% to me is unproductive. You know, so I would rather us focus on the more difficult mission, which is right now the mission at hand, right, which is the myth of authority and just, you know, abolishing people's belief in rulers. You know, that people have, some people have a right to steal other people's property and give it to other people who don't, have not earned that property.
We actually had that happen in court. I wrote up a cross-examination for an IRS expert witness, and we bring that out. And they said, look, is it immoral to force people to give you money? Well, yeah. Isn't that what you do every day at the IRS?
Mm.
No. Well, and she makes excuses, and says, well, okay, we'll get back to that in this moment because you're on the job and it's the law. We'll get to that. So, would you do it in your private life?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you start breaking down those contradictions in their head. You know, it mm-hmm. if it's wrong to force people to give you money, it's always wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And what they'll do is they'll say, like I think you mentioned earlier about, well, you got the roads, and, you know, the roads is the big one. That doesn't change the immoral act.
Exactly.
It doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter if I rob from Peter to give to Paul, and Paul really needed it. It's still considered morally wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, talking about the IRS, because I'm an acupuncturist, right? So I used to work in a car accident clinic. And I had an IRS agent working there one time, and that was when I really was getting into this stuff, you know, towards the end. And oh my God, I had to restrain myself from saying anything inflammatory to him. But you know, he would come in, I'd say, you know, how's your day? He's like, oh, I had a rough day at work. And in my mind, I'm thinking, how can you think of a government? See, this is the confusion, I think, where it comes from is people think of these positions in government as jobs. Like, to me, a job is something that actually produces value for society, right? Increases wealth. It makes us all, you know, increases standard of living, right? Whereas, you know, government, and also, by the way, is also only exists because there's a demand for it to exist. Whereas government jobs, you know, subtract wealth from society, lower the standard of living, and it only exists through force, right? There's absolutely no demand for it to exist, other than, I guess, the belief that in people of, you know, the myth of authority and the belief that it should exist, I guess, you know. But, yeah, it's just that, because then people say, well, if we get rid of the government, what are all these people with these jobs going to do? You get that argument?
Let's take a look at that. There'll be an extra few trillion dollars.
Yeah, exactly.
Available, and there won't be nearly the restrictions that you have in doing something on a voluntary basis people are willing to voluntarily pay for. So that I don't get too often. The biggest one is, what about the roads?
Oh, yeah.
Would you rather have roads never worked on again or continuous genocide? What? This is why I wrote this down just today, and I think this is going to be a pretty good way to reach people, mm-hmm. because generally what I'll do is this: look, if I was to do things like the government types, and I ask government agents this all the time, and it really pisses them off. It's a simple question: if I did things in the same manner as you guys, and I forced people to give me money, would you consider me a criminal? Yeah. Do you see? And most of them, they know where I'm going. So you see the issue here. But I think for some people, it'd be softer to just ask them, do you have any principles worth standing up for? And what I get to is it wrong to attack people? Is it wrong to initiate force? Do you want people to initiate force and threats of force against you? Well, no, of course not. Great, we got a great starting point there. Are there any exceptions to that? Is it ever acceptable to initiate violence or threats of violence against them? Oh, no. Mm-hmm. How does government get money?
Exactly.
And so now they can start to resolve the contradictions in their own head, mm-hmm. just like I did, and I'm sure you did. I mean, I think that we all come down to being anarchists because we couldn't resolve the contradictions in our head.
Yeah,
and that's what we need to help people do. Everybody already is an anarchist. Everybody, who, whether they want to admit it or not, because they don't want to be attacked. Mm-hmm. So their principle is, I don't want to be attacked. Well, neither do we.
Yeah, I firmly believe that we were all born as anarchists and that we were slowly indoctrinated first through, you know, statist authoritarian parental upbringing, and then to solidify that in the government schools, right? That authority always knows best. You know, you don't solve problems on your own. Always appeal to authority, and that's, you know, that's why it's so important. And kids, I think, exhibit this when they say simple phrases like, you know, that's not fair, or this is mine, or you said so. You know, and to me that implies like understanding of contract, verbal contract anyway, right? And
agreement.
Yeah, agreements.
Respect.
Respect. What do you call that? Like, just equal, I guess, you know, yeah, like the golden rule. You know, you don't want anybody to do things that you would not like done to you, right?
Right.
So, although, you know, I guess kids, when they're too young, they have to learn that one, I guess. my 4-year-old sometimes, you know, he goes on my 2-year-old, but eventually, you know, they understand that, you know, they learn that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And you just simple. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, one of the things that I noticed about my own children, and that really helped me, you know, get back to that, because you sort of lose this kind of view towards life, is when you're a child, you're very inquisitive. You're always asking questions. And I think we're curious about the world in which we live in. Mm-hmm. And every great advancement usually comes from asking questions. How do things work? How can I make this work? Why is this phenomenon doing this? How can I use this to help better men? I think it's bred out of us that when we go to school, it's all about just memorizing stuff. It's not about critically thinking. It's to be taught to be a skeptic and have an open mind, and just let's collect as much data as we can before we start making conclusions, people. And that's bred out of us. Mm-hmm. Because the people that force us into their schools, the people who force us to give the money, don't want their victims being inquisitorial and asking questions, because it's too easy, and I've proven it thousands and thousands of times. It is too easy to show the gun in the room and that they are not who they say they are. They're just people forcing us to give the money. And I have requested people come on the show and show me where I'm wrong. Show me a gap in my logic. Where am I getting my facts wrong that government is men and women forcing us to give us money? That's what it is. Now, you come up with an argument. If you can't show where my facts are incorrect, you damn well better come up with an argument to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they can't do it. that's where you start getting into the logical fallacies.
So how many people have actually come on your show and challenged you?
I've had a number of people actually challenge me, and I welcome them to come on, and the few that actually have come on have ended the show apologizing for saying XYZ, that my facts are right. This is not about me being right. This is what does the data or what does the evidence tell us? Mm-hmm. And we've always parted as friends. Mm-hmm. I have critics that think that I'm an idiot, I'm a wacko, I'm taking advantage of people, or gullible people, and that none of my arguments have ever any merit whatsoever. So, well, why don't you come on the show? If my argument that there's no evidence proving the laws apply, come on the show and provide the evidence.
Yeah.
We have a standing $5,000 challenge, and my friend Paul is the backing.
Wow.
That nobody will take it. We're actually going to try to do a crowdsource where people can, to be able to get this one critic on the show to provide the evidence. Because
mm-hmm.
I thoroughly refuted his historical aspect. He said, well, the people ratified it. No, everyone is forced to pay. Nobody agreed to anything. See, that's direct evidence. That counts, not your circumstantial speculation garbage. We figured if we could do a crowdsource to have him come on the show and stay on for the entire show, a charity of his choice would get the money.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he lose there?
Yeah.
Right? And he gets the opportunity to publicly humiliate me with the evidence.
Very nice.
That's win-win. So that he refuses. Because when all you have is logical fallacies, appeals to authority, and argumentum ad baculum, well, yeah, then of course you're not going to come publicly on the air with somebody
mm-hmm.
who can call you out on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting what you said before about how is society going to improve. You know, you say like they're always trying to be out of the younger generation, that inquisitive nature, and how does a society actually improve without that skepticism? You know, because don't you always want society to progress and move forward? And if you destroy that, then won't society just stagnate?
Look what the Catholic Church did. Look what Rome did. The popes was trying. They weren't able to do it completely, but they did a damn good job of murdering millions of people. They stifled critical thought and questioning for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. I mean, this idea that people shouldn't be asking questions. It's the idea of having a sacred cow. And I actually did it was a decent Photoshop job. I took a picture of a cow and I Photoshopped in "for I am jurisdiction and thou shalt not challenge," because that is something that they do. They will actually tell you things. Well, Mark, you're an idiot. You don't understand. Jurisdiction doesn't have to be proven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the AES, the NSA and the IRS and the DEA, see, when you guys, when we file against them, they do challenge jurisdiction. And no, it's not a trial issue. So one of the things I'm going to be publishing soon is where the ACLU sued the NSA in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And that it got thrown out. They didn't have to wait to go to trial. These are just some more of those lies.
Mm-hmm.
But they try to tell you that the application of the law is just the argument that the law applies to you is different. So that's, again, you know, the double standard or an appeal, special pleading fallacy. Mm-hmm. It's different. It's the same thing they use with government. Yes, it's wrong when you piece of filth anarchist, when you force people to give you money. That is criminal and immoral, but not when we do it. That's your argument? It's called special pleading. Well, I'm not so stupid. I don't understand simple logical fallacies like this. But I agree. Whenever you have any situation, I don't care if it's anarchist, it doesn't matter who you are, if you stifle criticism and you say that certain ideas are off limits to debate, you know, to discussion, you got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You got to say that is really bad thinking, and that has led to, well, we know what it's led to.
Yeah.
That putting a muzzle on questioning, just being inquisitive,
mm-hmm.
has led to the death of untold hundreds of millions of people.
And I've encountered so many conversations with people who get, you know, viscerally angry with me when I begin to question government and its legitimacy. Because there's so much history and emotion wrapped up in it. You know, like, you know, the government, they've helped people get out of, you know, child labor. It used to be horrible, you know. People used to work long hours. In fact, wasn't that a good thing?
What about World War One again? Oh, that's right. If you didn't have a belief in government, you went to prison.
Oh, yeah.
I actually have my great-grandmother's naturalization, her application for naturalization, because they're originally from Newfoundland. And it says on there, there are two things you have to swear that you do not believe in. You have to swear that you are not an anarchist, and they spell it out, not bombs, and they got it right.
Yeah.
You cannot have a disbelief in organized government. And the other one was you couldn't believe in polygamy.
I don't see it.
So here, we're not going to let you onto this continent if you don't believe in organized government.
Yeah, I did hear about that. Now that you brought that up, there was a long list, you know, of different things, like polygamists probably, and different religions, right? You know, anarchists just thrown in there. And you're right. Like when people think of the benefits, the visible benefits of what you know, government claims to have done, that we conveniently forget all of the drone, you know, bombings and genocides and, you know, internments and different things that is littered throughout history, and somehow that's okay because we have libraries.
it's quite something. And in the double standard fallacy is particularly prevalent with Americans. Mm-hmm. It's constant. If it's an American or an American ally, they can bomb and kill people indiscriminately. You apply that same damn standard to, let's say, the Pakistanis. Let's say they set the drone over Phoenix. Well, we were sorry innocent people got killed, but this is important. It is war.
It's not murder. It's war.
You know, that's right. You have Americans that will defend the instant incineration of hundreds of thousands of people in Japan. Two bombs.
Mm-hmm.
It's war.
Yeah.
Exactly. What if they drop that bomb on Miami?
Yeah.
It's war. It's okay. So. They would be horrible, cold-blooded murderers. It's that same double standard fallacy. That it's so prevalent, and it's just an excuse for murder or whatever horrible behavior you're trying to excuse. Doesn't apply to me. Yeah. Doesn't apply to me. Well, my gun says otherwise. So there's that.
Yeah. This reminds me of there's a quote. I forget who said it. If you kill one man, you're a murderer. If you kill many, you're a conqueror. And if you kill all of them, you're God.
This is also one in there didn't Stalin? No, was that Lenin?
I forget who said that. No, I don't know. but then there's also Voltaire. He was saying that, you know, you one man commits a murder, but then, you know, a group of men, to the sound of trumpets, you know, commit murder, and that's war.
I think in the same vein, it was one murder is a tragedy. A million is a statistic.
Yeah, right.
It's like it's no. And all these justifications to continue giving this false presumption of legitimacy to a group of men and women who deserve nothing but our disgust and disdain, and they certainly do not. We shouldn't be complying with that. I'm sorry, it's been a long day. But they don't deserve our compliance, the only thing they deserve is our contempt, and we should not be complying with them. And the only reason why they can get away with it is because enough people are still afraid of them and are complying. But there's more people every day coming to a realization that they do not have a moral high ground. They are not moral. They are criminals, and demonstrably so. And they can't make a moral case for what they do. And that's why they hang up the phone. That's law, they scream and yell contempt if you do it in court, because they do not have a moral basis. People need to just reconcile the contradictions in their head and be adults. Mm-hmm. Because when they do, they will proudly proclaim to be anarchists, because that's all an anarchist is.
It's not Molotov cocktails, right?
No, not at all. Not unless it's defensive force.
Yeah, right. All right, well, I don't want to keep you too long, so we'll finish up. So just let people know where they can find you if they want to learn more about your work.
Thanks. It's at marstevens.net, and all the evidence is there. I've got a ton of calls with the bureaucrats themselves, including an HD video with a federal magistrate in Phoenix admitting that the application of federal law was arbitrary, that there was no evidence to – and that's on HD. And, yes, of course he knew he was being videotaped.
Yeah.
But he is a libertarian – as far as the party, and he's not an anarchist, but we're working on him.
Actually, before I let you go, did you hear of a guy called Mark Victor?
Yes.
Attorney for Freedom? What do you think about his work?
I think he does good work. You know, we see him at the Freedom Summit in Phoenix, and see him all the time at Libertopia. He takes a different view of things than I do. I mean, he's an anarchist.
Yeah.
But as far as helping people in court, I focus on issues of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Mark focuses mainly on issues of law. He'll argue constitutionality, whereas I'll come out and say the prosecution has no evidence the Constitution even applies.
Yeah.
But the Constitution is not an issue until the prosecutor puts some evidence on the table that applies in the first place. That's something that would probably get him disbarred.
Yeah.
So that's the main difference. I don't allow the prosecutor to have any sacred cows, and Mark does, because he doesn't attack it from that particular perspective.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But he's done some great work. He's got some good judgments for people. He's kept people out of prison, so that's always a great thing.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I recently learned about his work too. Well, thank you very much, Mark Stevens, for coming on. So this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.